It really is, again, that internal strife, wanting to do right, wanting to set things straight. So he's really coming back in and trying to set things right. He's got influence. So I teach a lot on influence, right? Not authority, not power position. I mean, he does have money. He's got influence. So he can do a lot of things in the community that other people can't do. And he tries to use that influence for good.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is Don Gleason. Don is a leadership consultant and the president of Achieve New Heights. He's all about helping people find the career that energizes them and a life that fulfills them. After 42 years in military and corporate leadership positions, Don helps others find their passion in life, as many know the destination, but not the path. And now, here's our interview with Don. Well, hey, movie lovers, welcome back to My Movie Story for another week. And welcome, Don, to the podcast. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to get together. Fourth time's a charm, right? This is going to be
Yeah, that's
neat.
right.
This will...
We've been battling to get online at the same time for a while. We were just chatting about that before, and various interruptions and power outages and sick kids and all kinds of stuff. But we're here we are. So I've been really looking forward to our conversation. And your
Same
three
here.
films in particular are big films, pretty heavy hitters. And this is actually our final episode of season two. So this is our 35th episode. So we've reached a bit of a
Wow.
milestone in the
Cool.
podcast.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'm really, really pleased with that, but looking forward to taking a bit of a break, and hopefully we'll be back in about September of this year with some new episodes. So yeah, so
Good.
this is a good one to finish off the season with. So before we talk all about your movies, Don, tell us a bit about yourself and with our listeners. What would you like to share?
But just to comment about the fourth time's the charm, right? We constantly think about, life happens.
Absolutely.
And it's easy for us, we're going to come back to some of this and some of the discussion, but it's so easy for us to get upset, get frustrated. Is Don going to want to come back after all this? And it's just, to me, it's about positive attitude and giving grace. And it is what it is, right? And I'm glad your family's recovering from the illness and you didn't have any major damage, it sounds like, from the storm. We just had a power bump last weekend and caused a bunch of damage. I got electricians coming out tomorrow, so
Oh no.
bummer, but we're gonna get surge protection anyway. So I am a 27-year Air Force veteran, so graduated college with a BS, bachelor's in civil and environmental, mostly the environmental. I really wanted to work in the environmental area. Clean up America's waters is what I kind of say, right? And clean up the sins of the past. We had so much contamination in the 70s and 80s that we found, and contamination of communities. So that was my focus. And didn't get a job coming out of college, so I joined the Air Force, which is a job, but I couldn't get into corporate. I couldn't get into other places. I had 454 rejection letters from companies saying they weren't hiring, which is interesting because today you just get ghosted. You don't even get a rejection
No,
letter
they
or
don't
an
even go to
email.
that. They don't even
They
go to
just
that
don't say
effort most
anything.
of the time.
But I got in the Air Force for 4 years and just loved it. I got some things will come out today. I had neat opportunities, one after another after another, and I kept staying. Oh, we'll do another assignment. We'll do another assignment, and pretty soon, all of a sudden, it was 27 years, and I kind of reached the peak of where I wanted to go. So I jumped out and got into. I only really interviewed for two or three jobs, but I'd really been thinking about it for most of my life: is what do I want to do? And I zeroed in on it. And I got a great job with a company, Booz Allen Hamilton Management Consulting. Stayed there for 9 years, which for military getting out of the service, 45% leave that first job within 12 months. I stayed in that first job for 9 years because I really focused in on what I wanted. So now I try to help people figure out what they want. And again, we're going to talk some of this.
Absolutely.
People are afraid to make that choice. I'm actually working on a talk. I like to speak in front of crowds and train and coach. That's my business. And I'm working on a talk called Choices. I'm not sure what the title is going to be. I'm just building it out. So it just came to me last week. So anyway, that's me.
Fantastic.
I'm married for 42 years.
Wow.
And I have three kids all in their 30s. Have essentially four grandkids.
Yep.
And I love to spend time with them. We love to birdwatch. We love to camp. We love to hike. We're heading out this weekend for a 4.5 week trip. We're taking longer and longer trips as we get older. So we're going to go all the way up to Canada and back, see Niagara Falls. And so it's going to be a 5,000 mile trip. So it's going to be fun.
Wow. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were telling me just before, it's a good way to escape the Texan summer because it's sweltering over there at the moment, isn't it? At the time of
it is.
Recording, it's late June. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's 100 degrees all the way up into New York. So I'm hoping it breaks as we can start heading north. Hope it breaks. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Are there like sort of any, you know, little cold spots in America at the moment where you can still go in the summer and get a bit of relative relief? Or is it just hot everywhere?
You know, I don't know. I'm not even sure Montana's cold or cool right now. I think everything is hot.
Yeah. Wow. So definitely a bit of a heat wave, isn't there? Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. For sure. And some wild weather happening in the States at the moment, as we were just talking about, and quite the opposite here in Melbourne. We've had some freezing cold mornings, Melbourne, Australia, freezing cold mornings the past week. But I'm also heading on a family trip next week as well up to Queensland, which will be good. It'll be slightly warmer there, not super hot, but really nice, pleasant kind of weather. You know, you can still walk around in a short and shorts and a t-shirt. So that'll be good. Driving up as well with two young daughters. So that'll be a test, but we'll give it a shot and we'll see if we survive in the car for 2.5 days each way. But it should be good. And
you know, I did a podcast one time about a vacation. We went to Yellowstone, and there was a time it was when the kids were small. I remember pulling off one time because everybody stops and they look up at the wildlife, right? The moose or the elk or whatever.
Yeah.
So there was nothing there. We stopped and we said, let's just all get out and point up the hill. So we did. We pointed up the hill and we sat there for about 5 minutes and cars started stopping. And then we took off. About 15, 20 minutes later, we came back and the number of cars was about four times more. And we stopped and we asked them, what are you looking at? Well, there was a car that was pointing way up here and we can't see anything, but there was something up there.
Love it. Yeah. That's great. That's the thing. It's like when there's a crowd milling around, people are like, oh, there's a crowd. There must be something there. Let's go look. You know, what's everyone looking at? And, you know, sometimes people are like, nothing. See you later.
Nothing.
So it's a good joke to play on people, isn't
it? Yeah. But those are fun memories the family has. Once we get together, and we laugh about it. So
that's
hope
great.
You have some of the same.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Looking forward to it. It's been a long time since we've had a good break. Looking forward to it. And it's a nice part of Australia too. It's all of our theme parks are up there and some really nice beaches and stuff like that. So yeah,
when I was in the military, I tried to get down to the Australian. They have what they call professional military education, junior, mid, senior levels. And I was trying to get to the junior, mid or senior level, which was in Canberra.
Oh, Canberra.
And, and usually goes to Air Force pilots. And it did.
Yep.
So I got to go to Army War College, U.S. Army War College, which was great by itself. But I always wanted to go to Australia. We're planning a trip one of these days to get down to New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah.
Take a month. So
it's great, definitely.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're looking for some spots to visit, things to see and do, let me know. I can be your unofficial tour guide and
awesome. And,
make sure you come to Melbourne. A lot of people, you know, just go to Sydney and think Sydney's where it's all at, but Melbourne is, you know, in my opinion, a better city, but that's just because I live here. I'm biased. Sydney's fun as well. Sydney's fun as well, but you know, you've got two really big cities and we kind of had this rivalry here, which is the better city. And yeah, it's quite funny actually. You know, very different cities, but both fun in different ways. So, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about your travels and your experience in the military coming up as we dive into these films. So we've got three films as we do in every episode. And just a little refresher for anyone who's joining us for the first time. The categories we do are the films that have changed our guests' perspective on something, whether that's life, themselves, a time in history, whatever it might be. Their all-time favorite film or one of their all-time favorite films, because, you know, we all have a few, but we choose just one for this podcast. And then the film they think everybody should see in their lifetime. It's a must-see. It's like, you've got to see this film for various reasons and you won't forget it. And all of your three films are, you know, really well-known films, huge followings, big stars. So there's a lot to talk about. So let's go straight into it, shall we, Don? And
Yeah,
we've
let's
got
do it.
to start with the film that changed your perspective, and you're going to elaborate a little bit more about why and how. So yeah, to start with, please tell us the name of this film and what's it all about.
Yeah, Les Miserables.
I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed. Oh, life has killed.
First saw it on stage in London. This was back in 91, maybe. And I had some friends took us up there from Germany. I was stationed over there with the Air Force. And then I've now seen it on stage in like four different places, and now the movie. So it's become one of those things. And we were joking about, we're not here to sing any songs. I can't sing the whole thing, but I can sing a whole bunch of it. It's amazing.
Right. Ah,
Because
interesting.
we had a recording, and when we were traveling, like to Yellowstone, we would sing and listen along to it because it's such a neat
Yeah,
story. And
absolutely.
it's
Yeah.
what gets me about it is the main character, Jean Valjean. This is France, late 1700s. He gets caught stealing a loaf of bread, and then he tries to run. So he gets 5 years for stealing and 14 years for running. So he's in jail for 19 years for stealing a loaf of bread.
Oh, criminal.
And criminal, yeah.
Yeah.
And he gets out, and it's all about his struggles as he tries to re-enter the civilian world, and his struggles about getting a job and everything. And he finally goes underground. He hides his identity and takes off no longer shows his prison papers, any of that kind of stuff. And he becomes the mayor of the town. He becomes the owner of this huge factory. But then all of a sudden, one of the young ladies in his factory, she's got a daughter and is up a ways being cared for by some other people who are just stealing her blind. It's kind of a whole funny story, but he ends up making a commitment to this mother as she dies that she will take care of Corsette, the daughter. So he goes, and then now he's having to run away. It's the journey of him running away from the Inspector Javert. And it goes on and on and on. So it's an interesting story, but the main
Very.
piece for it that really interested me was that struggle of how he got out and how he's trying to reintegrate into the civilian community.
Yeah, absolutely. And it spans decades and decades, doesn't it? And just so people are aware, we're talking about the 2012 version with Hugh Jackman, Russell Crowe,
What a great movie.
Anne
Wow.
Hathaway. And it had been done in the 90s with Liam Neeson, I believe. But I don't know if that was a musical. I think that was just more of like a pure
A
drama.
movie, regular movie.
Yeah, and then obviously it's a famous stage show which pops back up on Broadway and the West End and every sort of several years. So I guess the appeal of this film, like you were telling me a little bit more about this earlier, was I guess that time in history and the struggle of this main character just trying to find himself, and like the guy chasing him is just so relentless, like he's going to pursue him to the ends of the earth just to capture his guy no matter what, right? So
That's right.
yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about his journey, the main character, and like who he is when we meet him, and ultimately who he becomes sort of by the end of the film, and what he has to go through to get
Well,
there. Yeah.
when we meet him, he's in hard labor in prison. And they talk in the play, it's breaking rocks, right? They're all just 8 hours, 10 or 12 hours a day breaking rocks, right? But when you get them into the movie, the one you talked about, 2012, they're actually like pulling boats up the wall, up this water area, and they're doing it all by hand, and it's huge physical labor, right?
Oh yeah.
And this guy's pretty big. In fact, at one point in the story, this is when he's the mayor of the town, so much, much later, this wagon breaks a wheel and it's resting on this guy, and he's
Oh,
going to
that's right.
die. And they they get the mayor out there, and he gets under and he gets the wheel, the axle, and he picks it up, and they get the guy out and save his life. And Javert looks at him and says, "You know, there's only one man that I know that could do what you've done."
Yeah,
And
that's right.
he's drawn that connection to, this has got to
Yes.
be Jean Valjean. But
Yeah,
he's, you
that's right.
know, and that goes back into the battle, because every time they would come together, something would happen, and Jean Valjean would talk his way out. And finally, what was interesting is the story. So this is kind of a good versus evil story as well, right?
It
That
is in a
inside of
weakness,
Jean
yeah.
Valjean is that piece of, I want to be me. I want to get back in the community. I want to pay for what I've done, but I want to have a life. And so he's trying now to take care of Cosette, but Javert's trying to catch him and put him back in jail because he's gone underground. He's broke his parole. And then when you get into the, there's a spot where, just trying to think of it real quick, is they find somebody and they put him in jail and they say it's Jean Valjean. And Jean Valjean's the mayor, and he's like, yeah, I can't let this guy go to jail, not to take my place. And it's the internal struggle in the song, back and forth, right? And it finally ends with him walking into the courtroom and opening up his suit coat, and he's got the number pinned across his chest,
That's right.
right? 24601. And
Yeah.
he sings it out, and you know, he takes accountability for it. So it's that honesty, the integrity that wins out at the
Yeah.
sacrifice of potentially his life. But then he talks
Absolutely.
his way out of it again with
Yeah.
Javert. So it's
Such
just,
a compelling character, isn't he? Yeah.
it is.
Because
Yes.
he's like, no one, he's like, I'm gonna own my life and every part of it, the good and the bad. And he, like you said, he comes in and lets that guy who's trying to take his place get free, gets himself temporary captured, and then he's out of there again because he's got this mission, this purpose now, which is to find this little girl. So can you talk a bit about that subplot there where we meet the character played by Anne Hathaway, who I think won an Oscar for this role? She was fantastic in that performance.
Oh yeah. Oh
And
yeah, she was the
especially the I Dreamed a Dream performance was incredible.
Oh, isn't that quite a song?
What a
I
song.
dreamed a dream when time gone by. I can't sing, but I love
Oh,
that.
lovely voice,
I just
Don.
love the
Yeah,
whole
keep going, keep
love
going.
the movie. Yeah. I'll just have to start it off in the beginning sometime. So Anne Hathaway plays the mother of Corsette, which is the lady who works for this. And this is kind of a subplot too, you're right,
Yeah.
because she works in the factory and she's trying to be honest, unlike a lot of the others, who are, stealing, doing whatever they can to survive. Everybody's about survival,
Oh, yeah.
but
Back in
Anne
those
Hathaway's
days, yeah.
character is trying to survive, trying to be honest, sending money to this innkeeper family. Well, when you go to just before Jean Valjean gets to the innkeeper couple, they start going through, and they're just bleeding people dry. They put on this huge show, but they charge you for everything, right? Charge you twice for looking in the mirror twice, and they water down the wine and throughout the night, and
Oh, yeah.
they just the mead that they're
Very, very
using is
impressive,
not
wasn't it?
very
Very
good.
impressive times. Yeah.
So it's interesting how that all goes. And they start to negotiate. Jean Valjean's negotiating with the innkeeper couple about letting Corsette go. And of course, they're just trying to negotiate all this extra money because they're just, kind of evil again.
Yeah,
And
that's right. Very
he says,
corrupt.
"Look, yeah, so I'm going to give you this much, and you'll probably never even think about her again." And so he finally walks away with her. So
That's right.
it's good versus evil, good versus evil, good versus evil throughout the entire movie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's interesting, the subplots that it's the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. Yeah.
When Anne Hathaway's character, the other women turn her in, which is kind of interesting because they kind of almost see her as a threat. It's the gossiping clique
That's right.
against this girl who's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And they toss her to the wolves, and Jean Valjean doesn't really pay attention to her until all of a sudden, sometime later, when she's dying, and he says, "What have I done?
Yeah,
What
that's
have I
it.
done, sweet Jesus? What have I done? Become a thief of the night, become a dog on the run."
That's right. Yeah. And
Yeah.
the way just on that note, the way that the story is told through the singing is just incredible. Like in this
Oh,
film,
yeah.
it doesn't stop, from the first frame to the end. And you know, like you've got the big musical numbers, but then in between that, when the characters are just conversing and having these conversations, it's like they're singing, right? And it's constant, you know. And my first experience of that was when I saw the Broadway show Rent, many, many years ago. And I
I've
went
never
along with
seen
a
that one.
friend at the time who's like, "Oh, you'll like this. It's really different." It was the first musical I saw, and I was traveling in New York at the time and went and saw Rent, which was like that. Like every word, every conversation, every syllable is sung. And I was just remember being like blown away by that, like the effort that must take. And it's done really so well in this film, and you can follow it. You can follow the story and the conversations, even though they're singing, you know, because obviously musicals are not everyone's cup of tea. They're big, you know. And prior to this podcast, I didn't watch a lot of musicals, but I've seen a few now, and they're starting to grow on me, which is great. So, and this is like up there as, you know, one of the best ever made, I think, for its story, but just also how epic and like sprawling it really is, and how just you've got all these different stories, and then it shows Corsette growing up and the her meeting the Eddie Redmayne's character, and he wanting to, you know, sweep her off her feet, and Hugh Jackman's kind of like, "Oh, hang on a second here," you know. So it's, yeah, you get all this constantly evolving story, and then in the background you've got, you know, Russell Crowe, the sheriff from hell, if you could call him that. He's like, "No matter what, I'm gonna lock this guy up," you know. So
I'm gonna
it's,
get him.
yeah, such a compelling story, isn't it?
I even think about the subplot with the bishop. So, Jean Valjean goes to the church, and the bishop takes him in, and he gets food and puts him to bed. And in the middle of the night, Jean Valjean wakes up. He goes out. He takes the silver off the table, and he takes off. He runs. Well, then the constables or French police catch him, and Jean says that he lies and says that the bishop gave me the silver. So he goes. They take him back to the church to verify the story, and the bishop says, "Yes, that is right." But he says, "Remember this, my brother. I gave you the best. I gave you the candlesticks." And so please, you can thank you for doing what you've done. You've done a great job. But he's honest, and he can. So now he bishop challenges him, right? Challenges Jean Valjean, take this silver and make the best out of it. And that's when he there's a fantastic song right after that, which is that piece I was just singing, "What have I done, sweet Jesus? What have I done? Become a thief in the night, become a dog on the run. Have I fallen so far? And is the hour so late? But nothing remains but the
Great
cry of my
song.
hate." And it's he's made the decision that I'm going underground. I'm going to use this silver. The bishop is, he says, "I have a soul. How does he know?" And I'm going to use this to be a better person.
And he
And
does.
he does. He does.
Because the bishop was like, "All right, I could turn you in right now and you can go back to the jail cells." But the bishop saw something in him. He's like, "You know what? Okay, I can part with this silver. It's not a big deal, but there's something about this man." And then, yeah, he's like, "Okay, I've been given a chance here, and I'm not gonna waste this freedom." And that was his turning point, wasn't it? Because up
That's
until
right.
that point, he was just trying to survive no matter what. He was just trying to eat, stay out of the rain, have somewhere to sleep. And he's like, "Oh, hang on, here's someone who actually wants to see me succeed," you know. And he runs with that, and he builds this life for himself, still on the run, of course, you know, from Russell Crowe. So and just sort of coming back to this, I guess, this film and how it changed your perspective on things. Just to sort of wrap up our chat on Les Mis, can you come back to that and just tell us a little bit more about it, and you know, how might it change other people's perspectives if they were going to watch this film?
It focuses in on that reintegration to the civilian community, right? Being 27 years Air Force, I see so many people, military and spouses, struggle with that integration out of the military into civilian. The civilian companies, the people, here's some interesting numbers. Only 7% of Americans have served. If you go all the way back, anybody who's alive, go back to World War II all the way to today, 7% have served. Only about 0.8% are actively serving. So it's such a small minority, and all they hear about is the post-traumatic stress and the combat wounds in Afghanistan and Iraq and over the gunfights and how they come back and they struggle and the suicide rate 22 a day. military and veterans, and the civilian community is kind of afraid of the military coming into their company, into their community. Now they want to support them, so it's almost like a good versus evil there too, right? I never hadn't thought about that until just then. The civilians want to support them, but they're afraid. What's this going to do to my community? Are they going to take my hurt my kids? Are they going to hurt my? Are they going to steal from me? What's all going on? And because of the fear of post-traumatic stress, the fear of there's a lot of military who are homeless. It's that community struggling to how do we take them in and help them get on the right foot, but at the same time protect. So I just see that same piece of the tough integration. And that's what I do. I'm a career transition coach. I help military as they're coming out of the service and even veterans who are changing positions really write the right resume that resonates, that tells their story about what they've done. Most military do not know how to write a resume. Most people don't know how to write a resume.
Yeah, true.
And that tells a real story. I was reading one today for a PhD individual, and it's just, like a job description. I was responsible for this. But what you're responsible for and what you really did are two totally different things, potentially,
That's
in
right.
terms of it doesn't talk the impact. So I've really broken it down as some key areas to help them and try to help really get them ready to communicate to the civilian community, what their capabilities are. So they don't have to run. So they don't have to turn to alcohol. They don't have to turn to drugs. They don't have to turn homeless.
They can reinvent themselves and have a phase two of their life, whatever that looks like.
That's right.
And
And
that's a
I
hard
had such a good
transition,
one.
but that must be such a hard transition. But having a coach there who's obviously served as well, like yourself, is great. So that's great work that you're doing there. I'm
Oh, I
sure it's
appreciate
making a
it.
huge difference for people.
Yeah, very rewarding.
Absolutely.
When
For
I was
sure.
running it during COVID out and after I was running a nonprofit, we started it the month that COVID hit in the US. And for 3 years I ran that. We helped 157 individuals
Wow, that's
in that
massive.
transition. Yeah, that's
Fantastic.
a small slice of the pie, but to 157 of them, that's pretty big.
And think of all the people in their lives that have been positively impacted, that ripple effect. It's you can really never know how far that reach can go. So that's the power of coaching and mentoring people. It's life changing, which is fantastic.
That's
So
right. That's right.
great. So great chat about Les Miserables, or whatever we call it. I'm not sure quite
I
to
just always
pronounce
hear
it.
Les Mis. It's easier to hear.
Les Mis, that's the easiest way to say it. So will it be revisited in another film at some point? I'm sure it will. There's a lot of different ways that story can be interpreted,
They
but
always come back, don't they?
they do, yeah. But the 2012 version is right up there. It's a solid entry. So thank you for bringing that to the podcast.
You bet.
And we might move on to your next film, Don. And
Sure.
this is your all-time favorite film. And this is a well-known, well-loved film from the 90s, starring a big star of the time. He's still around today. He's doing pretty well for himself.
He is,
And it's a great adventure film. A few other little, interesting things about this film, which I'm sure we'll talk about. So please tell us, what is this film of yours, which is your all-time favorite?
Yeah, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
One man who stood for freedom became a legend. Kevin Costner, Morgan Freeman, Christian Slater, Alan Rickman, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. Prince of Thieves.
I didn't realize when you said earlier it was 1991. So it's been
Early
32,
'90s.
33 years.
Wow.
So,
Where's that time
but
going,
it's,
hey?
that's right.
Absolutely. Huge film when it came out back in the day, and Kevin Costner was just one hit after another. In the late '80s and early '90s, you had like Field of Dreams and Bull Durham, and you had JFK and a whole bunch of other things, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and it was a huge, huge hit. Had a big number one song that went with it from Bryan Adams, which was number one for like 75 weeks or something like that.
Oh, is that right?
It really was a good time in the movie. So Can you take us back to when this film, can you
Yeah.
remember seeing it for the first time or when it came out, what was going on in your life and where and when you saw it? Do you remember those
Oh,
circumstances?
91. I was in Germany. I actually had just come back from being deployed to Iraq, to Turkey, and then to Iraq. I deployed twice in 1991.
Right.
And so we were
Yeah.
for Operation Desert Storm. We were in Turkey supporting the Air Force Special Ops, Army Special Forces, as they were trying to do combat search and rescue missions down across Iraq.
Wow.
And then we went home for 3 weeks and we went back down because the Kurds had been pushed out of the cities up into the mountains. So we were there to stabilize the environment for the Kurds and stabilize their diet and everything and their health. I mean, I remember when we were having the briefings every night, you know, they were talking about the number of cholera cases and the number of this disease and that
Yeah.
disease up there. And
Gosh.
finally, we realized that all of a sudden things had changed when they didn't want our, you know, we call them meals ready to eat, our MREs.
Yeah.
They wanted their diet again. It's like, ah, things are changing. We're getting them stable, right? And then pretty soon we're bringing them back to the city. And my team went down into Iraq to Saddam's airport and we set up camp there and started operating airfield operations to bring
Right.
in supplies to northern Iraq to continue to stabilize that area. And we
Right.
rebuilt the we rebuilt the airport, rebuilt the runway. We were helping build a
Wow.
couple cities with their electrical power. So it was really interesting
Yeah.
to be in a foreign country. I remember on my
Absolutely.
last weekend as I left, we had redone the runway again. After my team had left, we redid the runway again. I was like the mayor of the town. And then I was leaving, and I had a bunch of just granola bars and protein bars. And I there was just a young family on the side of the road underneath a just a blanket, you know, it's like an old teepee almost, you know, a lean-to. And I just stopped, and they come running out, and I gave them a bunch of food, and the smiles on their faces. And at the time, my kids were 2, 5, and 7.
Yeah.
So that could have been my kids, right? And
Yeah.
here I was just trying to be nice to somebody over there and give them a little bit of a meal. And it
Fantastic.
made you feel good, but just
Absolutely.
seeing
Yeah.
the strife going on in that community and how Saddam Hussein was just taking advantage of the people.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I can only imagine what, you know, I remember I was young enough slash old enough, I guess, to remember when all that was going on. You know, and in sort of in the early 90s, and I didn't really understand what was going on. But then, obviously, later years, knowing what you know as you grow up and what was going on there, and to be there working in that environment, you know, must have been quite challenging, I can imagine, for you from time to time. But also, like you said, quite rewarding, and you know, to see like people like that thank you, and you know, see communities rebuild themselves and everything. So, yeah, what a lot of stories from that era, I'm sure, for
It
you.
was.
I
That's
can
right.
imagine. Yeah. And then so that was what was going on in your life. And at this time, Robin Hood was out. And you know, this is Robin, everyone knows Robin Hood. There's been multiple different versions of the character in films. And this, I guess, was Robin Hood for the 90s, very much so, with a very 90s star.
That's right.
You know, and a very, you know, openly American Kevin Costner trying to play an English character, but you know, accents aside, that's fine. You know, he did a good job.
That's right. He
And,
did.
and you know, then we had the parody of this film, Robin Hood Men in Tights, come out like a couple of years later, which was a good laugh. And we
That's
were
right.
chatting about that on a recent episode when we did Blazing Saddles, where we were talking about
Oh, okay.
Mel Brooks's films, and that was the film that introduced me to Mel Brooks. And obviously, it kind of, yeah, rips off Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves quite a bit. But yeah, for anyone who may not have seen this version of Robin Hood, because you know, some of our younger viewers might know I forget, the name escapes me right now, the young guy who was in Kingsman and the Elton John film, he did a Robin Hood film. Taron Egerton, I think, is his name. And there was the Russell Crowe one from 2010, which was a bit of a snooze fest. But yeah, the Robin Hood from the 90s with Kevin Costner. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about this interpretation of Robin Hood, you know, what the story is, and yeah, why is it your favorite film?
Sure. You know, it's again kind of that almost reintegration piece again. It's the right versus wrong. Which is interesting. I just when I all of a sudden when you asked me to look at three and I picked three and I start walking through them, it's like, wow, look at that. Always right versus wrong.
Yeah, there's always a theme with everybody's films. Yeah,
That's right.
absolutely.
Robin of Locksley, goes down on the Crusades, meets Hassin, brings him back because, what is it, Robin had saved Hassim's life, so now Hassim owes him his life.
Yes.
So he brings him back to England to find that his father's castle has been ransacked and burned, and his father's been killed, and even the servant that they had had been, his eyes had been burned out.
Duncan, he's
still alive. And it's all about now Robin kind of getting vengeance against the king, right? Because King Richard is gone. Mm-hmm. So now it's, the sheriff of Nottingham.
Has sort of taken over, while the king's on the Crusades,
That's it. And he's very evil, and he's just abusing people, and he's raping women, and all this kind of stuff. And he wants Maid Marian. Well, Robin and Marian had been at least friends early on in life. And he falls in love with her, and he's in the peace of Robin from the rich and giving to the poor. And he's trying to right the wrongs as it goes on. And the taxmen keep coming and taking from the poor and giving back to the rich. So it goes back and forth. And finally they go out into the woods. You know, was it Sherwood Forest? Mm-hmm. And there's the battle there. And finally the Scots, the Gaelic forces finally come in and just decimate the camp.
That's right.
Kind of put an end and kill a lot of Robin's team. And then he's kind of has remorse. So, hey, what's been going on? Everything was going great, you know, when I was really riding high. But now look at how many people have lost in my personal battle.
Yeah.
So he's, again, that internal strife of, you know, I'm trying to be victory. I'm trying to do the right thing. But now look what's happened.
That's it.
And but he falls in love with Maid Marian, and they end up going off into the water.
Absolutely.
Boat.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And
I don't know how much I missed.
I think you covered most of it. And back at a time when films had those, had happy endings. You don't see that very much in films anymore. And it ends happily for all involved, and the bad guys meet their fate. And
King Richard comes back at the end. And
does.
Sheriff Nottingham gets, I don't know if he gets beheaded, but he's put away. And...
Yep. Yeah, I think Robin Hood disposes of him in the final battle, and and it's just a good fun movie, you know. It sort of stays true to the legend of Robin Hood, you know, steal from the rich, give to the poor, and you know, rising up against the corrupt sheriff and the Maid Marian friendship. So it's all there, and then you've got the subplot of he meets his half brother, Will Scarlet, played Christian Slater. So that was an interesting little story there, that he had this half brother, and Robin Hood's like, why do you hate me so much? And then eventually he comes out and says, well, you know, we have the same father, and he loved you more than me, and you had the life I should have had, and all this sort of stuff. So then they end up kind of putting that aside and joining the battle, I guess the casting in this film is great. You know, you've got a really good cast. Obviously you've got Kevin Costner in the lead as Robin Hood, and does a good job. Your thoughts on some of the other actors? Obviously, Morgan Freeman. Yeah.
Oh man, that was one of the first times I saw Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
And I have just really grown to really appreciate his acting. And I didn't realize till recently that he was like 41 years old, something like that. I might be getting him and Harrison Ford mixed up, but about the same. They were they were both, you know, kind of, because Harrison Ford was an electrician or carpenter.
That's right.
And then he got discovered and became a huge movie star, right?
Absolutely.
Morgan Freeman was doing something similar.
Yeah.
So
he was a bit of a late bloomer, wasn't he? Yeah.
Morgan Freeman. Very down to earth. Yep. Doesn't forget where he's from, but is really a motivating individual. And you asked me what brings this one to me as a favorite, all-time favorite. And it really is, again, that internal strife. Wanting to do right, wanting to set things straight. You know, when he meets his half-brother, right, he wants to fix it. When he meets Maid Marian, he wants to fix it. You know, she's being abused, all the people of the community. So he's really coming back in and trying to set things right. He's got influence. So I teach a lot on influence, right? Not authority, not power or position. I mean, he does have money, but he's lost a lot of it because his father's house got ransacked.
Yeah, that's right.
But he's got influence. So he can do a lot of things in the community that other people can't do. And he tries to use that influence for good.
Yeah.
And again, I think there's a lot of military coming out of the service. everything revolves around me for right now, the military piece.
Yeah, sure.
They're trying to come back into the community and continue to do the good thing. One thing they struggle with, military struggle with, is the mission, right? When I was in the military, I had a mission, right? I was an infantryman or a tank driver or a pilot or me, a civil engineer. And we had a clear mission of how we fit into the big picture. And we went around the world doing different things where our country asked us to go do it and our country supported us. And now we come back and we're working in a Starbucks or a Home Depot or whatever, and we're selling things. I was a consultant, and I'm in selling my services to run different programs. Now, mine was a little bit closer because it was emergency management, so we were managing chemical warfare defense equipment or managing different supplies that are directly war fighting. So I kind of saw a mission, but it's not the same. So so many of us struggle finding that mission, that purpose when we come out. And I think Robin came home and he was kind of almost, what am I going to do? I want to come back to my house. I want to relax. I want to see where things go. And then, boom, now he gets that purpose.
He's got
I
purpose
got to
in him.
vindicate for the death of my father and stop Sheriff of Nottingham from doing what he's doing. And he now has a purpose, right? So I think there's a bunch of that really resonates with me.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, at first it's all about Robin trying to get revenge, you know, and he goes into the woods and finds little John and his cronies, and they sort of just want to hide out in the woods because they know they can't, you know, defeat the sheriff and his soldiers. But then, yeah, Robin sort of rallies them together, and they do small little jobs first. You know, they're stealing left, right, and center little carriages of gold. Fry Tuck shows up and they steal all his alcohol, but then he becomes like an ally, and he was hilarious in this film, the guy that
He
played Fry
was.
Tuck. He had some very funny moments. Yeah, and then eventually, yeah, like you said, the Sheriff of Nottingham sort of brings in the other guys, the Gaelic Celt soldiers or whatever they are. They ransack the forest, and then it's like, well, yeah, you know, they feel defeated, and then once they realize they've captured a few of the guys and they're going to be hung and all that, Robin Hood springs back into action, and then you get that famous shot from the trailer, I remember, where he shoots the arrow, and the camera follows the arrow and gets the executioner, boom, right in the head. And it's like, oh wow, I'd kind of remembered that but sort of forgotten it as well, because I rewatched it for this episode. It'd been the first time in a while since I'd watched it. And yeah, the action's really good. It still holds up pretty well
It
today.
is.
It's a good adventure film. There's some pretty intense swordplay and scenes in it, and it's, you know, it's quite violent as well. It's not exactly a little kid's film, you know. There are some pretty violent scenes in it, but it's good fun. It's just very entertaining, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not quite like a lot of movies today where it's just, fight, 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 kill as many things, break as many buildings, it's just all about the battle. There is a lot of gruesomeness in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, but there's much more story, right? If that makes sense. There's more story
Absolutely.
than there is violence versus today where it's like everything is violence.
That's right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely the violence is there, but it serves the story. You know, it's about them just getting to the next spot to rescue someone, and they need that person for the next part of the mission. So it's like every
That's right.
character has a purpose, you know, and it make that's what makes it really thrilling, you know, I think the action scenes, because you care about these characters and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And do you have a favorite scene from the film, you know, or is there more than one that stands out for you?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that one. It's probably where he meets Maid Marian, because she's kind of making it look like she's a man. And they actually go into a sword fight, if I remember right, running around
That's right.
the barn and everything. And he finally stops her and pulls the hood off her head. And it's like, Marian, right? But she's mad at him too, because feels like he left and left the community to
That's right.
suffer under the Sheriff of Nottingham in the king's absence, King Richard's absence. So he has to win that back. So it's kind of the start of a him trying to woo Marian into liking him again and then loving him and starting that love story, right? Every movie, good movie's got to have a love story, right?
Of course,
So
yeah.
I
But
think it's that surprise that
she's
that.
not very easy on him. She's quite like
No.
strong character, and she, you know, she sort of, you know, questions him and challenges him quite a bit. But then, when she's taken by the sheriff and he tries to marry her so he can take over the throne, then, he swings into action and saves her and, happy days.
That's
So
right.
he proves his love to her. And, and I noticed, the big hit song from that film, Bryan Adams, Everything I Do It For You. And that was, I think that was a line from the film. So I often wonder if like the film was, the song was made first and then they worked that line into the film, or if they showed Bryan Adams the completed film or the script and he's like, oh, there's the title of my song, but either way,
That's a good question.
it was a belter of a song, and it was a big hit. Still gets played on the radio today. I hear it on the radio almost every day. And it just instantly reminds you of Robin Hood. It's one of those songs. Kind of, and that was a big thing in the 90s. I think like the movie songs and soundtracks were a big part of the promotion of the film, and it really connected people to the film in a whole new way. So that was kind of, one of the sort of pioneers of that in the 90s, I think. And then
That's right.
obviously, you had other big songs in the 90s, like the song for Titanic, My Heart Will Go On, which was number one for like 3 years. Probably a bit exaggerating a bit there, but yeah, it's definitely helps elevate the movie a little bit when you've got like a song to go with it. So yeah,
That's right. Yeah,
cool.
a lot of the movie trailers today, they take some of the most gruesome parts of the whole thing and try to paint it all together. And
Yeah.
you're wondering, is the whole thing like that?
Yeah,
Or is
right.
this just the best? Is it even close? Because sometimes you look at some of the trailers and you see the movie and it's like, well, that's not what I
No, definitely
expected.
not. Yeah, it's different now. Trailers have really sell the movie, don't they? It's and quite often the film you see is not what you saw in the trailer, or or the trailer gives too much away, which is really frustrating as well. I
That's
think
right.
the trailers have changed a fair bit, but yeah. So Robin Hood, one of the good entries of the whole, I guess, Robin Hood, mythology and folklore, and I'm sure there'll be other interpretations in many years to come. It's just a timeless story, really.
That's right.
And we have one more film to talk about, Don, and this is sort of the big heavy hitter in a lot of ways that we've been saving till last. And this is the film that you think everyone must see in their lifetime. And it's an iconic movie from the 90s starring two pretty big stars. And when I told people I hadn't seen this film before, I was watching for this podcast, they're like, what? What? You've never seen this film?
You've never
I'm like,
seen
well,
it?
no one's seen everything, including me, right? There's a lot of things I have seen that other people haven't. But anyway, that's ne neither here nor there. But so glad I watched it. And now, we're going to talk about it. So yeah, please tell us, what is this film, Don, that we're going to talk about now?
That film, excuse me, is we were talking about Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, Demi Moore in A Few Good Men, and it's such a great movie.
Fantastic. Been looking forward to this one. Great.
Your men follow orders or people die.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You!
But if this case is handled in the same fast food, slick ass, Persian bazaar manner with which you seem to handle everything else, then something's gonna get missed.
In the heart of the nation's capital, in a courthouse of the United States government, one man will stop at nothing to keep his honor, and one will stop at nothing to find the truth.
It's really like three main characters: Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, and Demi Moore. And so Tom Cruise is playing a lawyer. He's a Navy lieutenant, and he's really more about baseball, right? His dad had been this huge trial lawyer. And he was trying to, he went to college to become a lawyer to kind of live in his dad's shoes, but he really didn't want to live there. He didn't want to step forward into the court. He didn't want to be a trial attorney. So he was just basically negotiating off every plea bargaining, every case he had, every case he had. When all of a sudden there comes a situation where at Guantanamo Bay, they end up young. Marine gets killed by his peers, and there's just enough fear. I think it was his, the young man who died, his aunt made a complaint, And they said, we need to send some people down and investigate this a little bit more, because what he wanted to do is just plea bargain it out. Right? Yep. Demi Moore comes out as this lieutenant commander and is trying to get the lawyer to take some action. He's like, I got a baseball game's going on. I'm coming up on a tournament here, right? You know, it's all about him. And so he finally decides, okay, let's go down there. Let's go down and figure it out.
Yeah.
And his intuition while he's down there says that there's something going on, but because he's so out of practice, he doesn't quite know. Colonel Jessup, who's Jack Nicholson,
yeah,
he's the commander at Guantanamo Bay, and very egotistical, very prideful, mm-hmm. right? Making everybody, he's online for general officer, become a brigadier general. He's probably, you know, online at the time almost to go up to joint chiefs of staff.
Yeah.
That's how hot he was. And nobody wanted to mess with him. And Tom Cruise sees some things that are just not right.
Yeah.
And it's the battle inside Tom Cruise of, do I step forward and be a trial attorney and go to court and really negotiate this? And everybody thought it was a code red. Code red meaning that Colonel Jessup had ordered not him to kill him, but to, you know, the fellow Marines to rough him up a little bit.
Mm.
Well, they used a chloroform cloth, I guess, and he had a reaction, which ended up a reaction in his lung, and he bled to death, you know, if I remember right. And of course, it's illegal to do a code red.
Of course,
but
yeah.
Tom Cruise just has this feeling that there's something going on here.
Yeah.
Just too many things going on. Mm-hmm. And it's actually interesting because when Tom Cruise gets up from the breakfast at the club to get ready to head back to the States, he looks at Colonel Jessup and says, hey, you know, can I get the travel order for the young man who died? And he says, Jack Nicholson says, sure, if you ask me nicely.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise is just kind of looking at him like, yeah, I have to ask you nicely?
Yeah.
I'm just asking for some evidence. So he plays along with it, right?
Yep.
And he's just got this gut feeling going on.
Yeah.
So he ends up making these plays in court. I remember at the very end, he's got two. The first flight was supposed to be out of Gitmo at like 6 a.m. and it was like 2:30 a.m.
Hmm.
And the kid hadn't packed a bit. And he makes a comparison to Colonel Jessup, who's coming up for like one day. You know, he's made X number of phone calls. He's packed his bag, all this kind of stuff. And but yet the young airman, Marine, hadn't packed a thing. So it's like he's just throwing holes into Colonel Jessup's story one after another.
That's it.
And he finally gets him riled up, so riled up in court that he hollers out at this Jack Nicholson hollers out this saying that, at least us in the military, you know, you need me on that wall, you want me on that wall.
Yep. Right?
And it's about building him up, that I'm the only person who can do this. I remember when we were in Baghdad doing the reconstruction in the fall of 2004, all over the place, they took their mission and changed the words to, you need me doing this reconstruction. You want me doing this reconstruction.
Okay.
And everybody was grabbing onto that. So it's just iconic across the military.
100%.
Now, finally, they get a not guilty verdict because it was the code red against the colonel.
Mm-hmm.
But the young man who, the two young soldiers, the young Marines that were being tried, still got kicked out of the service because they had participated in something that they should have known was wrong.
That's it.
But you get caught in the military doing what your leadership tells you to do.
Yeah, you don't question it, right? Yeah.
You don't, yeah.
Yeah.
But we have tried through the years. It goes back to the first movie, right? We're talking about Les Mis. And do the military just take orders and not think? And therefore, are they the right thing for the community? Or are they really thinking machines and problem solvers? And that's really the truth.
Mm.
But so it's kind of, again, that little subplot of...
Yeah.
And that's where he ends the movie. You know, we're supposed to think for ourselves. We're supposed to stand up for the young Marines and protect them and be leaders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't do our job. And so, we're going to get kicked out of the service, but now we're not, at least we're not going to jail.
That's
so,
it.
But to me, it's all about Tom Cruise and this fear the fear that he wrestles with, the fear of being like his dad, the fear of being in court.
Yeah.
And so many of us struggle with an internal fear, mm-hmm. fear of success, fear of failure, fear of comparison. And we don't step into truly what we are meant to be. And the world never gets to see our greatness, just like it almost never got to see his.
Yep.
So again, it's that internal struggle.
Yes.
It really, really excites me as he's going through it and he's battling it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And he really transforms mm-hmm. from this like sort of hotshot lawyer who's just kind of like, okay, whatever, it's, you know, procedure. I'll show up, I'll do the bare minimum so I can just come back and, you know, hit balls mm-hmm. at the batting cage. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, yeah, Demi Moore character pushes him and says, you know what, if we just let him get away with this, what else could he potentially do? And mm-hmm. at some point we have to challenge the powers that be mm-hmm. and hold them to account, you know, and that's really what it's about, is holding them accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and I've got to say, like, you know, Jack Nicholson's performance in this was just next level, wasn't it? You know, like he only has about 4 or 5 scenes, but when he shows mm-hmm. up, he commands the screen, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like mm-hmm. really, I think early 90s Jack Nicholson was just really at his peak. I think, you know, he yep. was just so accomplished. He'd won a few awards already and such an iconic actor. Tom Cruise was still mm-hmm. kind of on the rise at this point. But, you know, Jack Nicholson really stole the show, I thought. And, you know, years and years before I saw this film, in the early days of the internet, you could go and find all these like celebrity prank calls online. And there's one doing the rounds online where someone's taken all of Jack Nicholson's dialogue from A Few Good Men and uses it to call up and order a pizza.
Hello?
Hello? Are you calling to order pizza, or...?
Yes.
What's the phone number, then?
This is ridiculous.
Why do you think that?
Extend me some fucking courtesy.
I am. I'm asking requests.
I'd appreciate it if you would address me as Colonel or Sir. I believe I've earned it. Hello?
I'm not trying to disrespect you, sir. I'm just... I need phone number so we can take a delivery.
No.
it's hilarious. It's really well
I've never done. Heard that.
It's funny. I'll send you the link. It's
okay.
Yeah, I'll send you the link for that. It's a good laugh. And mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, distract too much from the power of the film, but I thought mm-hmm. I just had to mention that as a little side note. Is there sort of any other main points or I guess mm-hmm. themes in the film that you would like to talk about?
You know, what I've been reading a lot now is Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly. She had one, Dare to Lead, and she talked a little bit about shame. And now she's written a book, Daring Greatly, where it talks a lot about shame.
Okay.
And there's the suicide scene where the lieutenant colonel, who's Colonel Jessup's second, is like his deputy.
Yep.
And he saw what's going on and he wants to speak out, but he can't. Right, he knows if he speaks out, he's going against somebody who's going to be a general, could be a, you know, one of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs at some point.
Yeah.
His career would be over, and it's again that internal strife of what am I going to do? But he finally leaves the base, goes in hiding, turns up to Tom Cruise, tells him the story, but for some reason, when they give him his dress uniform, they give him a loaded pistol.
Yeah,
you know, he's supposed to be heading to court.
Yeah,
and he ends up killing himself.
Mm, yeah.
And to me, it's that shame, that guilt of I know what I need to do. I'm stepping into it. I'm gonna testify. But at the same time, that shame and guilt of not having done something, and the young Marine died.
Yeah,
and it was interesting to read be in Brené Brown's book and listen to her stories about shame and guilt and everything that goes on. I think about it from the military perspective of,
right,
you know, two young individuals, high school buddies, head off after graduation, go to the military, and the two moms get together and say, you take care of each other.
Yep.
And one gets killed, the other one comes home, and you have survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
You have two soldiers in the same unit who they deployed to Afghanistan or Iraq, and one gets killed, and they come back, and they have the survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
And so many military come out of the service with this mindset issues of guilt and shame of, and you know, have I done the right thing? Did my boss ask me to do things that I shouldn't have done, but I did? Did I behave right? Did I make the right decisions? You know, did I not protect the people around me? And that really eats at a lot of people. I mean, it's the heart, it's part of the heart of suicide, the heart of not knowing what they want to do next, the heart of homelessness.
Yep.
And it's that, again, that struggle, right? Tom Cruise, he has it in terms of I should step forward, but he's justified it and he plays baseball.
Yeah.
But Demi Moore has it. And she's like, no, we've got to do something. We've got to do right. Right. Colonel Jessup has it, Jack Nicholson, but he made it all about him, right? Very egocentric.
Very much.
I'm trying to think of the right word we use a lot these days. But anyway, it's all about him. It's selfish. But here's the lieutenant colonel who ends up taking his life. So you see the different ways that people handle the stress. And I think that to me was very intriguing about how we all handle it differently. Because I don't have any of those problems coming out. And you almost feel guilty at some point of not having the problems, right? Because you see so many others struggling with it.
Right.
But it's I guess, how I made up, how I handle those things, what I went through.
Yep.
Right? Some people who've gone through less have had a lot more heartburn than I have.
Yeah.
So we're each unique, and we can't judge each other based upon what we see. We have to take it for what it is, and what's going on in them. And we're all made up differently. So I think that's one of those underlying pieces of A Few Good Men that really, really resonates with me. It makes me think. I love movies that make me think.
Yeah, it does really make you think. And it's a powerful film, you know, and you can just, the pressure that's bouncing on them to win this case. And you're like, you know, they know they're up against someone very powerful who's been allowed to operate, you know, with very little accountability. And it's like, well, how are we going to do this? You know, and it's all about the truth, which leads to that famous line from the film, "I want the truth." And it's like, you can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
One of the most iconic movie lines ever, you know, delivered perfectly by Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, you know, and it's, you know, people know that quote, even if they don't know the film, you know, and I'd said that quote 1,000 times before I even saw the film, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because I knew it. It was just such a famous line. But now I have seen it, you know, and I'm so glad I've had the chance to watch it and talk about it with you. And you know, hearing your take on it's been really interesting, as well as your other films as well. And yeah, like you said, once you start talking about these films, you detect that there's a theme across the three films. And most of my guests do that. I don't know if it's ever intentional, but it just seems to come up. Where it's like, oh yeah, there is a theme with these films, you know, and we've covered lots of different themes. So, you know, three great films, you know, all first time on the podcast and part of our growing library of movies. So, you know, thank you for bringing them to the show, Don. And just in sort of wrapping up our conversation today, I was keen to just pick your brain a little bit on a couple of things. Firstly, any other honorable mentions? So films, other films you like to talk about, or other favorites or must-sees that come to mind?
You know, one movie that my family has gotten into on Christmas Eve, and I just love It's a Wonderful Life, but you already had that one out. But one thing that popped up was Galaxy Quest.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And it's such a spoof on Star Trek.
Yeah, it's great.
And how those characters fell into the Comic-Con and, you know, making money off signing their pictures and all this kind of stuff, but it's so fake. And then there's these people, you know, aliens who are watching us and see all this, the show, as historical documents, right? It's such a funny spoof.
It's a great film. And it's kind of grown in more popularity over the years as a bit of a cult classic. It's a good one. Yeah, it is a good one.
And I was surfing channels on Saturday afternoon, I think, and all of a sudden I came upon that. I was like, I gotta watch this again. This is fun.
You've just reminded me, actually. I haven't seen it in years, so I need to rewatch it. It's a good one. And then just lastly, any ideas on, I guess, like, you know, the future of the movies, you know, and obviously there's a lot of changes going on with, you know, less people going to the theater, opting more for streaming. Just I guess also the content is different these days. But in your perspective, is there things you'd like to see more of or less of when it comes to the movies of the future? Any thoughts on that?
I would like to see one thing I was really impressed with is Star Trek Next Generation. Once they started talking once about with the characters and the directors about the themes of for the different episodes and how it mimics an issue from a different perspective on that the public is dealing with, right? So there's one episode where Geordi LaForge, Geordi has the visor because he was born basically blind, so they're able to attach into his retinas through the brain these visors. Now he can see things that we can't even see. And he ends up, long story short, saving this world, and the world was all about perfection. So he would have been put to death when he was born because he wasn't perfect. But here he was later on saving. And you think about that and how we treat people, we deal with them. You think about going through grade school and middle school and high school and the bullies, and they're always picking on the weakling. And some of those weaklings turn out to be some of the greatest people, right?
Absolutely.
So so
The
it,
underdogs,
I
right?
like it. Yeah, I like it when we deal with different issues from a different perspective and make us think. And that's probably why I don't see the value. I mean, Iron Man is kind of neat, but after a while you get tired of, well, at least I did. I got tired of the fighting. There was one where he, I think it was the second version, maybe, he gets they blow up his house and he ends up in this town right around Christmas, if I remember right.
That's right.
And
That was
he's
Iron Man 3, and then he has to
three. Okay.
rebuild the suit and the little kids helping him and stuff. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I enjoyed
Yeah, so
that
that's
one.
kind of neat because it's the struggle, right, of putting it together. Batman, where he's down in his cave and he has to work his way out of this almost like a, just like, it's like a water well, but it's much bigger than that, right? He has to work his way out and he has to build his body up to be able to get out. But so it's that struggle of making it happen. So those are kind of fun because you have to deal with that internal, to me, dealing with the internal desire to live and do right. And I like those kind of movies. That's why It's a Wonderful Life always gets me, right? Because
100%.
when he doesn't see the value in his life. He had such a great dream, and then he doesn't realize what a huge impact he's had until it's put right in front of him.
That's
And
right.
then when he's
Incredible
standing in
movie.
front of the Christmas tree and all those people are coming in and they're giving them
Oh, yeah.
savings and life, some of them life savings. And every time I've seen it 30 times at least, and the tears just roll down my face.
Oh, it's just an incredible movie. Yeah, incredible movie.
Just
I
to be
felt so
loved that
amazing.
much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it just goes to show that, you never know what impact you're gonna have,
That's
and
right.
our struggles and how we handle them is what defines us, really, and our
That's right.
character, 100%. And yeah, I can see that theme in your films as well, and in many other films. And that's a reason why I think they are so popular, because we all struggle with stuff, and
That's right.
we watch movies to be inspired, be moved, and relate to the character. And we rewatch certain films because we see the character come out of it and change and be a better person. And we might not be there ourselves in our personal life yet, because that can take years and years. But we can sit down, and in a 2-hour movie, we can be like, oh yeah, this is me. This is how I'm feeling right now. This is the life I would like to live. And we see the character figure it out and work their way out of it. And that's inspiring. And those are the films we tend to go back and watch and watch, and
That's right.
can plant those seeds in our mind.
If they can do it, I can do it.
100%. It's not all that. It's not all impossible, really, some really good points there you've made on the future of films. And I think it does come back to the themes across your three movies. So again, Don, this has been a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for being the guest for our last episode of season two. We're now 35
Excellent.
episodes in and counting. So we'll be back in around sort of September or so for
Okay.
season three. We've got some great guests lined up. But yeah, thank you very much for your time and being a guest on My Movie Story. It's been great.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity. And I love it. Just like I said earlier with the movies, right? I loved it when they think, and you've made me think into these movies. So I appreciate that. And I hope that we have imparted some of that on your audience.
Oh yes, me too. And yeah, thank you very much. It's been a great conversation. So enjoy your vacation with your family, enjoy your camping, and yeah, thanks for being on the show.
You as well. Good luck with the two young ladies going north.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a road trip, but it should be fun. All right. Thanks a lot, Don. Take care.
Bye now.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.